Our third speaker, Paul Nuttall, is a member of the European Parliament in the United Kingdom and the deputy leader, as Joel said, of the United Kingdom Independence Party. It's my pleasure to invite you to speak.
Thank you very much, and it's wonderful to be here in Jerusalem, the heart of Israel. As I'm a British member of the European Parliament, I really want to split my speech into two. I'm firstly going to talk about the European Union and how laws are actually made within the EU, and then I'm going to talk about my own country and how I believe that laws are not being enforced, and they're not being enforced because they're being sacrificed on the altar of political correctness and indeed multiculturalism. I come from Britain, the nation of Magna Carta, signed 800 years ago, which set us on the road by which people were protected under the law. From that point, we've since had a Bill of Rights and successive reform acts which have ensured that those who made the law were accountable to the people. Well, unfortunately, that is no longer the case in Britain. Over half our laws are no longer made in London, in Westminster, by our elected representatives. Half the laws are made in Brussels, and they're not made by members of the European Parliament who are directly elected. They begin in the European Commission, made up of 28 European commissioners. None of them are elected. None of them are accountable to the people. And in that commission, they meet in secret with 3,000 working groups who advise them on the legislation and how it should be put together. They don't tell us who sit on these working groups, but we know who it is. It's the corporates, it's the multinationals. Hence why there are more lobbyists in Brussels today than there are in Washington, D.C. Now, I put it to you that if law is made in this fashion, if it is made behind closed doors, if it is made by those who are unelected, and then handed down to the European Parliament simply to amend, I believe this is an affront to democracy. In fact, it's not just undemocratic, it's very much un-British. In Britain, the people who make the laws are those we have elected at Westminster. Those laws are then passed up to an unelected chamber, the House of Lords, to amend. This is the juxtaposed position to Brussels, where the laws begin and are made by the unelected and unaccountable and handed down to the elected to amend. I fear that many of the hard-won victories that my country secured in the 20th century have been given away in the 21st, and I look back at those who died on the battlefields of Flanders, those who risked their lives above southern England during the Battle of Britain, who went up to fight for democracy and sovereignty and freedom. How would they feel to know now that half the laws of my country are now made in a foreign city by unelected, faceless bureaucrats? I believe they would turn in their grave. You would not accept it here in Israel. You would not accept it in the United States, and it should not be accepted in Britain. I now want to turn to a thorny issue, one that the vast majority of politicians in Britain will not speak about. They would prefer that it didn't exist. We have a parallel legal system in Britain. It is called Sharia law. In my country, tolerance has led to intolerance. We turn a blind eye to practices we would never condone. There are 85 Sharia courts in Britain today. where the word of a woman is only worth half that of a man. Where a man can simply divorce a woman by saying, I divorce you, I divorce you, I divorce you, on three occasions. A recent poll in the West Midlands showed that 2/3 of women from Muslim backgrounds have said that their husband has more than one wife. Polygamy is condoned, whereas bigamy is illegal under British law. On some occasions, women are returned to violent households. This is an affront, ladies and gentlemen, to the rule of law. There is one law, and everybody, no matter what culture you come from, no matter what religion you practice, should all sign up to one law. There are 170,000 girls walking around in Britain today who have been female genitally mutilated. It has been illegal for over 20 years, yet there has not been one single prosecution. We have a situation where there is an estimated 8,000 forced marriages every single year. Are we cutting this out? Are we ensuring that young ladies are not forced into these marriages against their will? No, once again, the British legal system turns a blind eye. Now, finally, I'm going to deal with an extremely delicate issue. For the past 15 years in the UK, we have had successive grooming scandals whereby young girls have been groomed, raped, molested, given drink and drugs by predominantly men of Pakistani origin in cities like Oxford, Derby, Sheffield and Manchester, yet the authorities have turned a blind eye and let this happen. The worst example is a place called Rotherham, where 1,400 girls have been put in awful circumstances, as I said, raped, molested, fed with drink, fed with drugs, girls as young as 11 years of age by men of Pakistani origin, yet local politicians, social services, and the police did nothing. They refused to enforce the law because they were worried about community cohesion. We must never turn a blind eye to scandals like this. The law must be enforced. We must protect young women in our country. Politicians must not turn a blind eye to wrongdoing. We must be brave. We must stand up. We must be counted. We must not be afraid of being accused of being an Islamophobe or a racist or a xenophobe. The law is the law, and it doesn't matter, as I said, what religion you practice, what culture you're from. When in Rome, act like the Romans. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to finish by saying this. We are the country of Magna Carta, but unfortunately we have lost our way. We've lost our way because we've handed over much too much power to the European Union, where laws are made in secret behind closed doors. We and my party are committed to taking our sovereignty back and ensuring that the people who make the laws in our country are the people we elect in London. Equally, at the same time, we and my party are going to stand up for normal, hard-working British people and ensure that we have one land, one law, and everybody abides by it. Thank you very much.
ladies and gentlemen, Paul Nuttall.
There we go. It's a good start. There we go. Good evening, conference. Thank you very much. Cheers. The migrant crisis that we're facing in Europe at the moment is an unprecedented movement of people, or at least it is since 1945. And I think before we address the problems that this is causing, I think we need to look at the reasons why it's happening. In the long term, you could argue that this has been self-inflicted. I believe that the foreign policy that the Western powers, ourselves and the USA, have followed since the turn of the century have been little more than a disaster. We have been arrogant in believing that the Arab nations wanted the democracy that we have. We've been idealistic, we've been utopian, we've believed that there is a natural right and natural wrong in politics, when I would argue that there are grey areas and there are evils and lesser evils. And indeed, we've been immensely naive. Naive in particular over the Arab Spring. We believed it was an upsurge in democracy. We believed that they wanted the democracy that we have. Indeed, I said in 2011 that it was little more than a charade, and it was being used by the Islamists to remove secular dictators, dictators who were bad, cruel, and evil, but at least they kept a lid on a bigger evil, I believe. That evil is jihadism, radical Islamism. We were foolish to remove Saddam Hussein. I was opposed to the war back then simply for this reason. It made no sense to me to be removing the man who Al-Qaeda hated even more than George W. Bush. I was opposed to the removal of Colonel Gaddafi, again, an evil and wicked dictator, but a man who Al-Qaeda had attempted to assassinate on a number of occasions. And indeed, I was opposed to Britain involving itself in the civil war in Syria. And indeed, if the coalition government of the Conservatives and the Liberal Democrats would have got their way, then we would have been arming these so-called rebels in Syria without ever realizing who they actually were. And it turned out they were the al-Nusra Front. It turned out they were al-Qaeda and that they were ISIS. And if that would have happened in 2013, ISIS would be killing people now using British weapons. In the short term, it's been caused by European politicians, namely Angela Merkel, who has said to everyone, if you're from Syria, you can come and you can claim asylum in Germany. And many did come. However, many may be fleeing Syria, but most are not. Indeed, the Slovakian president, Robert Fico, has said that 95% of the people who are coming to Europe are not genuine asylum seekers. They are economic migrants. Indeed, Eurostat, the European Union's own statistical gathering body, has said that 80% of those who came between April and July this year were not from war-torn Syria. They came from places like Albania, Afghanistan, Pakistan, the Gambia, and Nigeria. In the meantime, we are allowing people to break international law. The Geneva Convention, which says that you must claim asylum in the first safe country in which you land. The Dublin Protocol, which says that you must claim asylum within the first safe European Union country that you land, are being broken on a daily basis. The idea simply is, if you're fleeing a war-torn country, you claim asylum in a country that is close by. Because when your country is safe again, you will return. That is not the case with this crisis. These people are making their way to Germany and Sweden in their droves, and they have no intention of ever returning. To call this a refugee crisis would be a mistake. It is an economic migrant crisis. There will be three consequences to the immigration crisis that we face. The first is simple, economic. We will end up with an oversupply of labour. In Britain, we have had this now for 10 years. Wages have been stagnant since 2008 as a result. Indeed, in many working class communities, we have wage compression, where British people are being undercut primarily by Eastern Europeans who will come and work for less. Indeed, it will be even greater as a result of this crisis, because the majority who are coming are young men of working age. Indeed, in the jungle camp, as it's known, in Calais, it's estimated that 97% of the migrants in that camp seeking to make their way to Britain are men. 81% of these migrants who are turning up in Germany are unskilled. Indeed, it is estimated that there will be 400,000 new welfare claimants in Germany next year alone. In the long term, it is argued that an influx of people will mean a growth in GDP. However, I say that money isn't everything. Social cohesion is more important, and we cannot cope with an influx of people in the manner in which it's happening at the moment. The next issue is security. ISIS have already told us that they are going to flood our continent with their jihadists. So you think that we would do something about this? You think we would control our borders? But no, we are not. We're not even checking who these people are. When people are turning up in Germany with Syrian passports, it now turns out that one in three of those passports is a fake. They are freely available on the Turkish black market for €500 a go. Indeed, it's estimated by the German government that they have 8,000 jihadists on the streets of that country as we speak. And what are we doing in the UK about this? Well, we have over 500 people, 500 British citizens, who are fighting for ISIS at the moment in Syria and Iraq. And what does the Prime Minister say we should do with these people? Well, he says, when they return home, we must send them back to school. We must re-educate them. This is not good enough. If people leave our shores to fight for ISIS, their passports should be taken away, their citizenship should be revoked. This influx, ladies and gentlemen, and I've said this in the European Parliament, and I know it's quite controversial, makes the next attack on our continent not a case of if, but when and where. And unfortunately, ladies and gentlemen, we are sacrificing the security of our own citizens on the altar of political correctness and multiculturalism. Now, the last thorny issue I want to deal with, or the last consequence, is one which Western politicians do not dare touch. Some in Eastern Europe have dealt with it, but they have been denounced as demagogues, populists, and quite frankly, dangerous people. Primarily, the Prime Minister of Hungary, Viktor Orban. The last problem we will face is a cultural one: demographics. The Muslim population in Europe has doubled between 1979 and 2009, and it will double again by 2020. And we in Europe, and in particular in Britain, do not have the confidence in our own culture to stand up for our own values. I spoke earlier today about the growth of Sharia courts in Britain and Sharia law and why we are not dealing with this problem. It is because we do not have the confidence in ourselves. You look at what's going on in Sweden, for example, the best example, I believe, the worst example of a country which has lost not just its own sense, but its own confidence. We now have a situation where Malmo is the rape capital of Europe. And what about those Eastern European countries that are standing up for their values? Well, we have Frans Timmermans, who is the Vice President of the European Commission, so in effect, the second most powerful man in the European Union, going on British radio only a few weeks ago to tell the Eastern European states like Hungary, this is globalisation, this is multiculturalism, this is the future, get used to it. How dare an unelected technocrat tell an independent nation state that they must get used to multiculturalism? It's a disgrace, ladies and gentlemen. And we in Europe look on. We look on as we are under the burden, or bearing the burden, of this crisis, whilst the rich Arab Gulf states do absolutely nothing to help their co-religionists. Qatar, Kuwait, Bahrain, the United Arab Emirates are doing absolutely nothing in this crisis, although Saudi Arabia has offered to build 200 Wahhabi mosques in Germany. You could not make this up. We are buckling under a wave of mass immigration. But we can stop it. But it will take willpower. We must look, for example, to the Australians. When Tony Abbott came to power in 2013, there were 50,000 illegal immigrants landing in Australia on boats. He put into place Operation Sovereign Borders, which simply stopped the boats and turned them round. Now, what has he achieved? Well, he's destroyed the people trafficking rings. The immigration detention centres all have closed. Not one single boat landed in Australia this year, and no one has died in the Indian Ocean. It works, ladies and gentlemen. It just takes the willpower to do it. Immigration is good, but it must be controlled. We do not want to see mass, uncontrolled immigration, because any sovereign nation must have the power and the right to say who it wants and who it doesn't want to come to its country. Europe, unfortunately, is in decline. And it is in decline because it does not have the confidence to protect its own heritage and culture. And those of us who do are denounced as populist, demagogues, and indeed nationalistic. But I believe we have sense on our side. We must regain our self-belief. We must regain our confidence. And we must have the willpower to ensure that the century we hand on to our children is not one of greater intolerance, but one of greater enlightenment. We have a proud heritage in Europe, and one that we have given to the rest of the world. We have given democracy. We are the continent of the Renaissance, the Enlightenment, commerce, the Industrial Revolution. We should take pride. We must not self-flagellate any longer. We must stand up for our values, and we must uphold the rule of law. Ladies and gentlemen, we can stop this crisis. It will take some very difficult decisions, but we must act now. Now is the time for tough love. We must stop the boats. We must turn back the clock and we must ensure that the Europe we hand on to our children is one that we can all be proud of. Thank you very much indeed.